You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Spring training is almost here, and the Texas Rangers are preparing to once again get to the playoffs. They seem to have a lot of the components to actually do that. So let's talk to T.R. Sullivan about that. I'm Allison Footer. T.R., I want to concentrate on the outfielders today, and it's a pretty just kind of interesting dynamic. I want to talk about Nomar Mazara. 21 years old, considered to be a future all-star. Would this be considered like a big year for him? Maybe getting some more time against left-handed pitching, really to establish himself as an everyday player.
Well, Allison, you and I both know from doing this a long time that second year in the big leagues is a crucial year for young players. And we saw that with Mazara last year a little bit in that he came up and was great in April and May. He was the American League Rookie Player of the Month. Kind of tailed off in the second half, which tells you that, you know, number one, he was going through his first full season in the big leagues. Number two, the league was adjusting to him, and the advanced scouts were being mean and filing scouting reports on him, and pitchers were adjusting to him. So the second year is kind of like that. The league knows Nomar Mazara. They know who he is. They know his strengths and weaknesses, and they're adjusting accordingly. So Mazara really needs to, you know, make the proper adjustments himself. You know, he's got experience under his belt. He's seen all these pitchers. He knows what they throw. So, you know, he's got a good baseball aptitude. I think he'll adjust, and I think you'll see a really good season for Nomar Mazara. But, you know, you're definitely right. This is going to be a big season for him.
Yeah, it's a lot easier to sort of ingratiate yourself and get comfortable when you have other people that are picking up the slack, and it's not all up to you. At the same time, it's a contending team, so there's not going to be a whole lot of wiggle room for struggles. But that brings me to Carlos Gomez, and obviously I watched him play a lot here in Houston. It did not work out for him here. He goes to Texas last year, goes to the Rangers, and absolutely just kind of breaks out of whatever doldrums he was feeling in Houston. Sometimes I guess the change of scenery helps. The Rangers didn't really do anything to change him much, but certainly he did enough with them to bring him back. So I guess there's a pretty good feeling among the Rangers front office that he will continue to be the Gomez that they saw and not so much the one that the Astros had.
Allison, he professes to have really connected with Rangers hitting coach Anthony Iapoche and, you know, maybe take a little more disciplined approach. And the other thing is, you know, the big thing that everybody talks about with Gomez, he didn't have to be a superstar in Texas. He had he had Beltre around him, and you know Carlos Beltre came in that deal last year, and Jonathan LaCroix, and you know all the other guys they have in the lineup this year. You know, some of those guys are gone. They probably want a little more offensively from him with Beltre gone. It'll be interesting to see what transpires, because you know you saw what you saw in Houston, you saw what we saw here in Texas. It'll be interesting to see which side of the spectrum he falls on this year.
Yeah, sometimes I think that some players just have the ability to not let things build. So when things were not going well for Gomez in Houston, just from a strictly playing standpoint, then he started getting criticized a lot for his demonstrative acts, which don't really translate well when you're not hitting well. And it just seemed to escalate and escalate. He's a really, really nice guy. I mean, he's a very likable person. But I think that maybe there's some players that could just, like, totally, like, clear their mind of anything that might be building, and maybe Gomez just wasn't able to do that and absolutely has to have like this like peacefulness as he's also playing. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. I think the key to a lot of players, and that comes with maturity, is that when you get into tough times and you start struggling and you have the strength of mind to work through it rather than let it get you down. And, you know, Carlos hopefully learned from that in Houston, because we know he's not going to hit 400 this year. We know he's going to go through slumps, and every player does that, and Adrian Beltre does that, and he doesn't let it bother him. Yeah, that's a huge key for Carlos Gomez, is not letting the, you know, we talk about peaks and valleys of a season. He can't let the valleys get too deep, and he can't get it, and it can't get too long.
So moving to right field, Sinchou Chu, it all depends on health for him. Obviously, an extremely effective player when he's healthy, but he's just never seems to be healthy, four times on the DL last year. So I guess when it comes to any kind of like questions that we'd be asking right now, it's all about just if he can stay on the field.
Well, yeah, you're right. And the big, to me, one of the most interesting things to watch in spring training is Delino DeShields, because this is a young kid who was the Rangers opening day center fielder last year. like we talked about with Mazzara, was his second year. He struggled. He didn't get off to a good start. He lost his job. Mazzara kind of took over. Now, how that impacts Shin-Soo Choo, it's simple. If the Shields comes into camp and can, you know, play center field, be a leadoff hitter, be the dynamic player that he thinks he can be and the Rangers thought he could be and obviously others have thought he could be, that might change the whole dynamic of the Rangers' outfield. You might see the Shields play center field, Gomez move over to right, and see Shin-Soo Choo get the majority of his at-bats at DH. So those are the two things you got to kind of watch with Choo. Number one is he going to stay healthy and hit like he's capable of? And number two, are the Rangers going to have a better lineup with the Shields in the outfield and Choo being a DH? Obviously, Choo has made it clear that he doesn't want to be a full-time DH. Nobody really does at this point in their career unless you're David Ortiz or Ryan Howard. But that's one of the storylines to watch in spring training is, will the Shields push Choo into the DH role?
Yeah, it is interesting that he doesn't have any desire to be in that role, so maybe that would motivate him a little bit. Who knows? But okay, TR, thank you so much. Appreciate your time. The countdown to spring training has been on for a while, but now it's really on. The trucks are heading out to their respective spring training sites, which means pitchers and catchers are going to follow not far behind. Let's talk about the Oakland Athletics with Jane Lee. I'm Allison Footer. Jane, okay, so just a couple of small news items. First of all, Sonny Gray is going to pitch in the World Baseball Classic. So there was some speculation going on for a while, and I know Team USA was trying to recruit him, so to speak. He's had some kind of injury issues. He missed some time last year with a forearm strain. I guess there's not really any concern with this because he'll be closely monitored.
Yeah, and I mean, if there was any concern, 1% concern, I don't think that they would let him do this. The A's have always been fully supportive of anyone wanting to participate, letting them go and do that. And in this case, it's no different. Of course, that is the main question. You know, he did have so many injuries last year. So many different little things pop up throughout the season, and you would think, well, going into spring training, wouldn't you want to just keep him close by, keep a close watch on him? But they feel that he is 100% healthy. He's been working out with a personal trainer for the first time this off season. He's already throwing off the mound, and by the time he joins the team, he'll have already been on his normal spring training schedule, throwing every 5 days, and they're not going to mess with that. His schedule will remain the same. I think, it goes for any pitcher participating to make sure that their schedule isn't affected. So that won't be a problem. And I think that the team's viewing this as a good thing. You know, this gets him maybe into competition mode sooner than later, gets him going. Sonny is a guy that thrives on competition in that type of environment. And he loved his time with, when he played with Team USA several years ago. So I think it's a good thing. And of course, if anything pops up between now and then, I'm sure they would, pull the reins back and maybe nix the whole thing. But for now, he seems good to go.
So I want to look at the outfield a little bit, the outfield configuration. I think I like this outfield. You got Chris Davis, Rajay Davis, and Matt Joyce. And maybe you could kind of tell us a little bit about the fourth and fifth outfielder options, but I don't know. I mean, there's obviously a lot of experience, and it's a veteran outfield. I'm not remotely suggesting that the A's are going to be these, massive contenders in their division, but I do kind of like how this is configured. Matt Joyce especially gives them a left-handed hitting option. So what do you think of the outfield overall?
I think they did a good job of shoring it up. It was definitely, I think, a concern last year, and I know going into the offseason, I don't think it was any secret that they needed a center fielder. They had several guys on their radar, really wanted someone who could fill a bunch of holes, not just play center field, but maybe bring some speed, hit at the top of the order. And Rajay, of course, can do all those things. And he's a guy that's familiar with the A's. They're familiar with him, him having played for them before. And, you get a guy coming off a World Series appearance, that's never a bad thing, and especially the role that Rajay played. Talking to guys, some of his his new teammates at FanFest this last weekend. I mean, you can't talk about Rajay without, you know, mention of that Game 7 home run. So I think that, you know, he brings experience. There's obviously experience next to him on both sides. Chris Davis being back, and then Matt Joyce. You know, they really are excited about this addition. They do see him probably in a platoon role, and at this point there's kind of, you know, a question of who will join him in that platoon, and they do have several options, namely Mark Canna. They also have Jake Smolinski returning. So I do see the outfield being better, mostly just because of who's manning it in center, just with Rajay coming.
Yeah, so the Aces had their fan fest, and that actually got a lot of attention. Good location. There seemed to be a lot of interest there. And I do like, I mean, this is the time of year everybody's very optimistic. Even it doesn't matter how good or bad your team is supposed to be. Players tend to be very optimistic going to spring training, first couple weeks of spring training. You look at the cast of characters, and you're like, this might not be such a bad team. And I really, really like Stephen Vogt. His comments, he's all fired up. He's obviously a team leader, but he feels pretty good about where this team is going into the season. So I guess it's nice for A's fans to hear that from one of the guys who is in the know.
It is, and I think, I mean, Bo is, he's also realistic. I think everyone around him is very realistic. But I think that they're excited just about the team, and just about having fun again. I think a few players mentioned this past weekend that they weren't having fun last year. And during the course of a 162-game season, I mean, if you're not having fun, while playing, and, I mean, obviously wins help that cause, but they weren't getting too many of those. But I think this was a team that was just kind of down, and not only because of the losses, but because of maybe some of the things going on inside the clubhouse. And I think that they've weeded out some of those bad seeds, and they've brought in guys that they're familiar with. I mean, they have three guys, new guys, but guys that have already been with the A's before, not just Rajay, but they have Adam Rosales coming back. They have Santiago Casilla coming back. So kind of a rare deal where you have multiple guys that have already been employed by the team that are returning again. And it's no coincidence. I mean, they saw these type of guys for a reason, you know, recognizing that maybe, I shouldn't say maybe, but most likely this won't be a season in which they'll be contending just yet. So in the meantime, you know, you want to fill the clubhouse with guys that can make a difference on and off the field, you know, helping these young guys, nurturing them along, helping them develop. So I think there is excitement just, you know, based on the fact that these guys can look around the room and be excited about who, you know, they're about to begin this journey with. And, you know, looking at the division especially, it's maybe the toughest division in baseball. It's already an uphill climb, you know, looking around, and then, you know, also looking within and maybe recognizing that they're probably not there yet as far as, you know, contending, but they do feel like, you know, they can compete every day, especially with the pitching staff that they have. And, you know, I think that they're looking to surprise, not in a way to where, you know, win the World Series surprise. That would, of course, be the most ideal thing, but probably not realistic. But surprise, you know, and just kind of sticking in there and, you know, inching back toward 500 and maybe making things tough on some of their division opponents along the way.
Okay. Well, they're always an interesting team to watch, so we will do just that. Jane, thank you so much for your time. The Astros are about ready to head to their new spring training site in West Palm Beach, Florida. So let's talk about the outfielders as we get ready to watch this whole spring training unfold. Let's talk to Brian McTaggart. Tags, I want to talk about the outfield. It might be actually a pretty interesting configuration, or actually an interesting to see how this all shakes up spring training. What position is actually nailed down? I guess just Josh Reddick in right field, right?
Well, as of right now, I think Reddick plays every day, you know, usually in right. And, of course, Springer's playing every day, plays some center, moving over, you know, to position he played in coming up through the minor leagues. He was a center fielder. And then, you know, the Astros had Dexter Fowler, so they had to put Springer in right, and he did pretty well over there. But, and, you know, they also have Nori Aoki in the pitcher. He'll play some left field. Marisnik can play a little bit of everything, and Carlos Beltran is going to get some time in left field as well. So there's your five outfielders right there. I think there's going to be some mixing and matching going on. I mean, Reddick won a Gold Glove in 2012 with Oakland and has played primarily right field. He's seen time in center, but with Springer kind of moving between center and right, I think Reddick splits time between left and right. For example, on days Marisnik starts in center, Springer could start in right and Reddick in left. And on days Nori Aoki plays in left field, Springer could play in center and Reddick in right. And so it's just going to be guys moving around a little bit. And there's versatility. I mean, I think, you know, Springer's a Gold Glove caliber outfielder. You know, Beltran is at the end of his career, used to be a Gold Glove outfielder, but I think he'll do just fine in left over there. And then, of course, you know, Reddick's going to play a high caliber level as well. And then Marisnik, if he played every day, would be a Gold Glover caliber guy as well. He's probably their best defensive outfielder. So it's going to depend on the opposing pitcher and who's hitting and who's not. But, man, A.J. Hinch has a lot of options when it comes to his outfield.
Yeah, I guess options is a good way of putting it. Conundrum might also be a part of that, too. The center field will be interesting. Just with Springer out there, he's obviously a no-holds-barred kind of fielder. He pays very little attention to what might be coming up behind him as he's sprinting to getting to some of these balls. And center field is going to be totally different. I guess what's behind him will be totally different. So it's a shorter center field with the hill now gone. The flagpole that was in the middle of play is now gone, thank goodness. And so I guess a slightly smaller dimensions to have to cover. So I guess that could work in Springer's favor.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, if there's ever a case where they have Springer in center Marisnik in center, Springer in right, and Reddick in left. I mean, not many balls are going to drop in that outfield. And you're right, you know, in center field at Minute Maid is going to be moved in from 436 to 409. So those balls that are hit on the hill will be home runs. And I think anything that is not hit on the hill, but Springer's going to have a really good chance to run it down. I mean, he's played 19 games in center field in the big leagues. You know, like we said, we saw him do it come up in the minor leagues. He did it in college. So it's a position he's very familiar with. And has played at a very high level. And they just have a fantastic defensive outfield right now. Aoki's got some limitations in left, but I think any one of the other four guys they put out there is going to do a nice job. But with Springer and Reddick alternating between center and right and left, it's going to be a pitcher's dream, even in a ballpark now that's smaller.
Yeah, and the overall theme, I think, is like you said, it's going to be a great defensive outfield. But it's going to be a fantastic lineup. And just when you look at every position and just like the lineup that they have compiled, obviously they were going very, very heavy on offense. And these guys fit right in. And that clearly was, I think, on the forefront of their minds before figuring out defensively where all these guys were going to go.
Yeah, well, if you looked at their offseason, I mean, they went into the offseason looking at some left-handed bats, and they identified three guys off the bat, no pun intended, Reddick, Beltran, switch hitter, and then Brian McCann, left-handed bat. And, I mean, they signed all those guys by very early in the offseason. They really haven't done anything significant since. So they were aggressive, and they got the three guys that they identified. And you're right, number one, it was about adding offense, adding left-handed bats. And they also got three guys in McCann, Reddick, and Beltran who they feel very comfortable putting in there defensively as well.
Okay, good stuff. Thank you, Tags. The Angels are preparing to head to spring training pretty soon, just like all 30 teams. Let's catch up with Richard Justice and see what's going on with that club. I'm Allison Footer. Richard, first of all, a nice little feel-good story that we're going to start off with. Houston Street just recently made a huge donation to Austin RBI. I know that you were right in the midst of covering that. What do you know about that?
You know, this is something you and I both know about from a few years back when the Astros groundskeeper, Dan Bergstrom, was the representative of Major League Groundskeepers and went to Austin, and the groundskeepers installed a baseball diamond near Reagan High School. And somewhere along the way in there, Houston was at the unveiling of this diamond, and Dan Bergstrom would drive over there at 5 o'clock in the morning, work on the field, and then drive back for an Astros night game. And he said the first time he saw kids playing on that field, it brought tears to his eyes. When they opened the field, Houston was invited to speak. And a couple of guys he played with at the University of Texas said to him, hey, you got to meet this guy, Matt Price. He's got an amazing story to tell. He was a guy, he and a couple of college friends came to Austin. They graduated college. They were going to get in the banking industry. They're going to make millions of dollars and live the Austin, the Hill Country life. Well, Matt Price made the mistake of going out to Reagan High School. He had played college baseball to help with the team and fell in love with the fact that these kids needed mentors. They needed facilities. And he started RBI Austin. That's the RBI Reviving Baseball in the Inner Cities. Allison, from 5 years ago, from that first summer, 150 kids, they had 853 kids and 50 teams last summer. They're going to have over 1,000. And those guys said, you got to tell Houston Street, you got to get involved in this. You're going to be blown away. And Houston Street was so moved. He said he saw lives change. He saw these kids that need positive models, role models, male models. And what he did was he committed $100,000 a year for 10 years to build a big complex in East Austin for boys and girls, for baseball and softball. And his dream is it's going to be much more than $1 million. But that's what he can contribute is that. And it tells you what is the line about Eleanor Roosevelt line about better to light a candle than curse the darkness, and he's made lives better because of this, and it is a very cool thing, and it tells you a lot about what kind of person you've met Houston Street, what kind of person he is. You know, for the background of Houston Street, his father was one of the great Longhorn football players ever, 30 game win streak, national championship, and all that. Died suddenly 2 years ago of a heart attack. Houston still grieves. He started the foundation, Street 16, in memory of to preserve his dad's legacy and his memory. And through that's going to be the vehicle fundraiser for this commitment. He hopes it's much more than $1 million, but he knew $1 million was what he could commit.
Yeah, he has that was my next question. He has obviously a very dear spot in his heart for Austin. And the area and the history that his family has contributed to.
Yeah, he's lived there every day of his life, and it's funny. When he met Matt Price for lunch, Matt took him to El Rancho, the Tex-Mex restaurant on South Lamar, which was where James Street took the kids after Longhorn games on Saturday. And he said, I pretty much was putty after that. And beyond that, he said, you know what? He has three brothers. He said, my mom and dad raised me to encourage me in everything I did and to tell me it was good enough. And even if it wasn't good enough, my effort was good enough. He goes, I can't even imagine where my life would be without that kind of encouragement in my life, what my mom and dad did for me. And he said, and you see it in the faces of these kids. It's almost not even about baseball. It's about having people that listen to kids and let them know they care for them. And he said, and one of the things Houston Street said is, when you have great diamonds, you know, it's hard to a baseball diamond. One of the reasons it's struggled in the inner city is it's a lot of upkeep to keep a baseball diamond presentable. And he said, I think to have a beautiful baseball diamond to these kids is a metaphor for how they feel about themselves. It's a little point of pride. Look how great this is that we're part of. So that's. You know, the one thing, you and I know this, we see it all the time. There are players doing so many small acts of kindness and large acts and all this. And Houston Street is one of those guys that the whole game should be proud of.
Absolutely. Wow, you said it well. Okay, now we have to go on to much less exciting topics, but absolutely relevant to the Angels. One of those being that our old friend Bud Norris has signed a minor league deal with the Angels. He's going to turn 32 during spring training. He still seems to have something left to offer. So this was kind of smart. I would think that a team that has so many uncertainties surrounding their pitching, I guess every team does, but really the Angels, of course, more than anyone. Bud Norris makes all kinds of sense on a low-risk, high-reward situation.
Yeah, and that's one of the things I love about spring rosters, and you see it, you know, you go through the transactions, invited to camp, minor league contract, invited to camp. And this just means that you had some baseball guy stand up and say, hey, I watched this guy in Atlanta last year. He in the 10 starts he made for the Braves, I think he's got something. I think he can still be resurrected, you know, and to say, well, it can happen. You know, Bud Norris is 31 years old. he is who he is. Like, we all thought Rich Hill was washed up too, and Rich Hill just signed a contract for $48 million. Is an inspiration for every player who's been told, hey, get out of here, you're done. So, you know, we know, you and I know there was a time we thought he might be a upper half of a rotation or middle of the rotation big league starter. So the talent's there, and obviously he's been humbled a little bit, and you get to go. The way I look at it, you get to go play for Mike Socia. You get to play for the Angels. And you know, to be around guys like Garrett Richards and Matt Shoemaker, who've had some hardships himself, and Jesse Chavez, you know, it's a learning experience. And who knows? You never know how these things work out. You know, I'd be the last one in the world to write off a guy who's about to turn 32 years old. You never know.
Absolutely. And so I wanted to look a little bit at the outfield, and there's really not much to dissect and pontificate on when it comes to these outfielders, except Cameron Maybin, who, of course, was traded from Detroit and had a late start to last season because he was dealing with an injury that he suffered during spring training. But certainly, I mean, he played in 94 games and he hit .315. Certainly, when he's healthy, that he can be a huge asset. So I guess that's of the outfield situation. There's really only him that we'll probably be looking at and scrutinizing closely.
Yeah, well, you know, they added Cameron Maybin and Ben Revere as maybe
right.
The fourth outfielder. And what jumps out at you is, and this is the way Mike Socia likes to play. He likes to force the action. He likes to get guys running on the bases. And so now you have Cameron Maybin, who has stolen bases in the past. Stolen 40 bases at an earlier point in his career. You have Mike Trout, who has stolen 49. And you have Ben Revere, who's stolen 49. So Cole Calhoun, who's a fixture in right field, signed to an extension and all that, he's not going anywhere. You have the best player in baseball in center field. And you have two very, very talented guys. You know, a couple of years ago, Ben Revere was considered a top prospect, was traded in sort of a dramatic trade for pitching. The Twins traded for pitching. And Cameron Maybin's been a guy that everyone in baseball loves the skill set. It's just the injuries that have kept him off the field. So maybe you're going to have days when you have Trout, Maybin / Revere out there, and given the fact that Espinosa at second can run, Simmons can run, you'll have a little bit. I don't think the Angels are going to hit a ton of home runs, but it's an outfield that could be a positive for the team. You know?
Absolutely. Okay, Richard, always a fun talk with you. Thank you very much. The Mariners are getting ready to head to spring training, so let's talk about what we might be expecting to see when they arrive, when pitchers and catchers and everybody else reports. Talk to Greg Johns about all of that. I am Allison Sutter. Greg, I was reading through your recent inbox, and a very astute fan asked you what the biggest surprise of all of the Mariners pickups, and my goodness, were there a lot of Mariners pickups this offseason. So if you can sift through those in your mind, what answer did you give for the biggest surprise of all of their pickups?
Yeah, my answer, it probably was kind of a under-the-radar pick because, you know, a lot of these picks have been talked about, a lot of these new guys. Mitch Haniger, I think, is going to play a big, big role, and guys like Danny Valencia and Gene Segura. These are well-known as guys, you know, Jared Dyson are going to play big roles. You know, so the kind of guy that I thought flying under the radar a little bit, Shea Simmons, the right-hander that they picked up from the Braves in the trade. And he kind of came quietly because they got him they made two moves, and they got Drew Smiley, and everybody was talking about that as a key add to the rotation, which he will be. But Simmons, a young guy, a pretty interesting guy that had Tommy John surgery and hasn't pitched a whole lot the last 2 years, but prior to that was a fast riser in the Braves bullpen, and we're looking at him as a setup guy to Kimbrel, a hard throwing guy that throws in the 96-97 range, and you know, really was kind of on the rise, and then had the Tommy John, which, you know, as we know, if you follow baseball, is not a career ender in many cases, but it is a setback, and usually takes a year, sometimes a little more, to come back from. So Simmons has had that year plus now. He did come back at the end of the last year for the Braves, and September call-up when it was hitting the mid-90s again with his fastball, and a young guy, I think, with given time, that they're very interested to see what he could do in that bullpen. Could be another power arm potentially in that group if he comes up healthy, which all expectations is he will. So Austin, that's a guy I think we haven't talked a lot about, but keep an eye on Shea Simmons this spring.
Yeah, it's funny because how many times have we seen this where the front offices have an entirely different look a entirely different viewpoint from the fan base when a trade happens. How many times do we see like a front office being really, really excited about the guy that nobody's heard about when, you know, two more marquee names are actually the ones that make the headlines, and it's always like some like really hard throwing young pitcher that we'll probably see 2 years down the road that really gets the front offices excited.
It's no doubt, and bullpens, you know, just seem to be becoming more and more important. And you see how much some guys are signing for this year, and getting a young guy that's controllable for another 5-6 years. These are the kind of guys that GMs are looking for, and certainly this kid sounds like could be a player for a while.
Okay, so I want to talk a little bit about the outfield, just how it's configured, what we can expect, maybe who the backup outfield options are shaping up to be. So Jerod Dyson, is he pretty much penciled in for a starting job?
Yeah, they're looking at him in left field on a pretty regular basis. You know, he is a guy that, you know, a lefty who's struggled against left-handers some in his career. So he'll definitely be in the lineup every day against righties, and they'll spot him in against some lefties. He's that speed element they've been looking for, and they really want to see how he can do in a leadoff role. So when he's not playing, I think that'll be kind of the interesting situation out there in left. They've got a couple candidates, and the obvious choice, I think, Guillermo Heredia, because he's a right-hander. They're going to be looking for a guy that can hit the lefties on those days that they spot him in there. So I think he's got a leg up. And another kind of under-the-radar guy, maybe not talked about too much, at Taylor Motter, a kid they picked up from the Rays. He's a versatile kid, can play all over, but he's a guy that hits lefties pretty well, and I think they're going to be taking a good look at him this spring to see if he might be a guy that can spot in there at times. And Sean O'Malley, a guy Mariners fans are familiar with, another utility player who can play all over, and a guy that could be in that mix. Ben Gamble, another backup, but he's a left-hander, so I think he's kind of fighting the odds there a little bit if they're looking for some right-handed punch. Valencia, Danny Valencia, that I mentioned, could be a corner outfield as well. But I think against lefties, he's going to be the guy at first base when they sit Dan Vogel back. So it'll be interesting to see. That'll be one of the questions we see shake out this spring for sure.
I guess there aren't really any other questions when it comes to the other starting outfielders. Martin and Haniger, pretty set there.
They seem to really like Haniger and want to see what he can do in right field on an everyday basis. So that, you know, he's a young kid, hasn't played a ton. He came up last year with the Diamondbacks, and the Mariners love what he brings. If he's what they think, he's going to be out there every day. And then Leonis Martin, obviously, in center. They do love the versatility Dyson gives them. They felt last year when Martin was hurt for a while, they just didn't have a center fielder. And that cost them a few games. They had Norio Oki in center, and he just didn't cover much ground. It was kind of a liability. And they feel now if they need him, Dyson can shift over to center, and obviously one of the better center fielders in the game defensively. So got some depth there. They got guys that can run, and that's what they like.
Okay, we're going to stop it right there. Thank you very much, Greg.
You bet, Allison.
MLB.tv Premium, the number one live streaming sports service, is celebrating 13 years. Watch every out-of-market regular season game live or on demand in true HD. Real-time highlights, live look-ins, pitch tracking widget, and more. MLB.tv Premium includes a free At-Bat 15 subscription. Watch live baseball on over 400 mobile and connected devices. Watch at home, in the office, or on the go. Every night, on every device. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Visit MLB.tv for details.